Wright. I hope you're listening on 98.5 and 1450 AM because I've got the one and only, the man that makes waves out there with us and makes us proud here in South Carolina, Congressman Trey Gowdy. How you doing this morning, Trey?
I'm doing fantastic. I hope you are.
We are. We're doing great, and we are so excited to have you on the air with us. It's been a good while, but I know you've been a busy man.
Well, I don't know if I'm busy or just a poor manager of my time, but it's good to hear your voice again.
Well, thank you very much. Before we get started, I did have, it's about a minute clip that I wanted to play. It's something you said at Liberty University that I think kind of sets up our whole conversation for today. So if you'll indulge me, here we go.
Yes, ma'am.
If you don't like this disunity, if you don't like this sense of angst, if you don't like what seems to be forcing you to be detached and cynical about your country and your government, you got to do something about it. You got to figure out what you believe, and more importantly, you got to figure out why you believe it. It is never enough in politics or any other sphere of persuasion to simply tell people what you believe. You have to tell them why you believe it. Do you believe in respect for the rule of law? Let me tell you something about the law. It is the most unifying and equalizing force that we have in this country. It is the only thing that makes the richest person in this county drive the same speed limit as the poorest person. It is what makes the richest person in Virginia pay his or her taxes on precisely the same day as the poorest. So if you don't like the direction of our country or you want a better future, what do you believe and why do you believe it?
Yeah, those were some powerful words, Congressman Trey Gowdy.
Well, yeah, thank you, and I appreciate Liberty letting me come, and they told me that their preference was for me to speak on something other than politics, and as fate would have it, that was my preference too. I think a guy named Cruz came 3 days after me, and he may not have got the same memo. But I enjoy talking to young people, and I meant what I said, and it's true for all of us. At some point, you got to tell people why it is you believe what you believe, and tell them in a persuasive way if you want to effectuate change.
Well, that's great. And the thing about the equality under the law.
Well, that is one of the most firmly held convictions I have, that the law is what separates us from other experiments in self-governance, and it, not on a political level, but on an American level, it bothers me greatly. I've only had a chance really to watch this administration up close. I've never served with a Republican president, but if he or she was as fast and loose with the law as the current president is, my reaction would be exactly the same. You cannot. I mean, I said it to a law professor one time, so he probably didn't sink in, but I said it to a law professor. You may benefit today from the non-enforcement of our immigration law. You may. You may benefit politically. You may have a family member that benefits. But tomorrow, it'll be a different law that somebody else will be advocating not be followed. And you will cry out for it to be followed. So you cannot play games with the enforcement of the law, or you're just a half step closer to anarchy.
So what does that mean, Trey, that we are a half step closer to anarchy when we look at Hillary Clinton and the emails and everything else, the FBI investigation, and now those have been turned over to the oversight at Congress, their notes? I find it interesting that they don't record these things. They just do their impressions, their notes. What does that mean?
Well, they've always done it that way, and I'll tell you why they do it. And for every one case where it doesn't work out good, there are 99 where it does. Let's assume you're a bank teller or you're the bank president, and your bank is robbed. And as the president, the FBI is going to come interview you as to what the robber looked like and what kind of car he or she was driving. So rather than record your statement where the defense attorney can use that to cross-examine you in court, they'll do a summary of your interview.
Mm-hmm.
And the FBI does that in all of their cases. So, I do get that people are suspicious and skeptical when they hear that she did not give what we call a verbatim transcript, but neither does any other witness at the FBI. There are plenty of things to criticize the Department of Justice and Secretary Clinton over, so we don't have to make up new ones.
Okay.
The best thing to criticize the Department of Justice over is the fact that they let the blindfold slip, and they're no longer blindfolded. They're meeting with the spouse of someone who's under investigation on the tarmac at an airport. They are making a decision not to charge over the July 4th weekend. We'll find out when we look at the 302s, and I did talk to Jason Chaffetz. I talked to him yesterday and the day before. What the FBI sent us is classified, and it's classified at the secret level, and whereas Secretary Clinton may mishandle classified information, the rest of us should not. This is what I hope tells all of us. If you are sick and tired of a two-track system where the famous are treated one way, the spouse of a president, I mean, honestly, do any of your listeners think if they were under investigation by the FBI, that their spouse would be allowed to meet with the Attorney General for 30 minutes? Do any of your listeners really believe that?
No.
So if you hate a two-track justice system, if you hate the perception that there's a different set of rules for the rich than there is for the poor, for white than there is for black or brown, for male than there is for female, if you hate that as much as I do, then the last thing you should be willing to do is promote someone who has benefited from that two-track justice system for most of her career.
Well, this is where I'm going with this. What is going to happen? You said you talked to Jason Chaffetz yesterday, and yet a lot of it, and I heard his interview last night, is so high classified that even he doesn't have the clearance to be able to read it.
Well, he can read it. He just can't talk about it.
Okay.
He hadn't read it yet because he's in Utah, and I know he's coming back Sunday to read it. And I have offered to come up early and read it also, although the frustration is, I mean, you read it, and then there's nothing you can do about it. I get people's frustration. When I'm not in South Carolina, I am traveling to help my colleagues in other districts so we don't give Nancy Pelosi the gavel back. I hear people's frustration. But we got to go back to high school civics. The legislative branch cannot prosecute, indict anyone. So it doesn't do any good to get mad at me or Jeff Duncan or Jason Chaffetz. We cannot prosecute anyone for anything. If you want to see people prosecuted, you better figure out how to win national elections and pick your own attorney general and pick your own U.S. attorneys. And then pick the head of the FBI when his or her term is up. You better figure out how to do that. Here's the thing, Ann. She is historically unpopular. She is historically not believed by our fellow citizens. So it is all there for the taking in November. So, I mean, if we're waiting on one more piece of evidence or one more example, you got all you would ever hope for in front of you right now. The question is, can you make the case that the Republicans deserve the White House having only won one out of the last six popular votes for president? But and this is where I probably do get a little bit frustrated, when people say, well, you know, we need this. We need an indictment. You better hope you don't get an indictment, because then she'll be out and they'll replace her with somebody even more difficult to beat. If you want to control the criminal justice system, you better figure out how to win national elections. And if you can't win a national election against someone with historic untrustworthiness numbers, then you got bigger problems than Jason Chaffetz or me or Jeff Duncan can solve.
Well, I think that is the question that everybody is looking at. She's up in the polls. Hillary Clinton is up in the polls almost everywhere. Donald Trump is behind. Now they've just done a reorganization of somewhat at the top there. But what do you think about his chances on the election?
Well, I don't have any reason to. I'm not a huge poll watcher this far out. I know the media is breathless and they're reporting of polls. And the travels I have done, I've been to Colorado and Montana and South Carolina a good bit in the last couple of weeks. I think there is a sense, a feeling that he is behind. But rather than say she's up, I would rephrase it. I would say Trump is behind. And at a certain point, if I were down in a race that were imminently winnable, then, Ann, you should ask me, what am I going to do? I think people ought to ask Trump what he's going to do. You and I are not the reason he's down.
No.
So, you know, at a certain point in life, we all have to look in the mirror and have enough self-awareness to ask, is there anything we can do differently? Is there anything we can do better? I'm not the candidate, and I did support another candidate, but I was also pretty clear I was going to support the nominee, whoever he or she was.
Sure.
But when you run to be the nominee, and if polling indicates that you're behind, rather than look at other people, and look, the media has never been helpful to Republican candidates, period. I mean, it's not like they really helped John McCain. They liked him until he became the nominee. They didn't help Reagan. They didn't help Bush. So this is not new. The media is not going to give you a fair shake, but you got to win anyway.
Absolutely. You are so right. But what, as far as coming back to Hillary, then, if what can be done, is there anything with the review that y'all are going to have from the FBI's notes? Is there anything that can be done, or is it just, I hate to say it, a waste of time?
Now, when you say can be done, do you mean criminally? Do you mean in terms of educating the public? What do you mean by can be done?
Anything criminal. Okay, let's go with anything criminally.
No, because Congress has no power over the executive branch. Every criminal investigation you can possibly think of is controlled by your executive branch. I'll give you a perfect example. You do not ask your state legislators or your state senators when they are going to make an arrest or an indictment in a robbery case. You ask the sheriff.
Right.
You've never asked a single state legislator or a state senator, when are you going to do something about the last burglary that occurred? So you can't ask members of Congress, when are you going to investigate or make an arrest or make a prosecution in a criminal case? We have no power to do that. I cannot arrest someone for jaywalking.
No, but
I can find the facts and I can turn them over to the FBI. But that's as far as we can go.
Then what is the purpose? What is the purpose of investigating the FBI's note?
To shine scrutiny on it, so people can determine whether or not they think that branch of government is doing what it's supposed to be doing. That's the whole purpose of oversight. Purpose of oversight is to shine the white light of scrutiny. It can't be to pursue criminal charges because we can't do that. But I think knowledge is power, and there are lots of ways people can express themselves. I mean, there's not a single listener you have, unless your sheriff is listening, there's not a single listener you have that can bring criminal charges against someone else. But I bet they still want to know whether or not somebody's doing their job, whether or not they did it fairly, whether they considered all the facts. So there are lots of reasons to keep the public informed, even if you can't ultimately make an arrest.
Well, all right, Trey. I think a lot of people, they're just looking for action. It seems like there should be some way to force the FBI, the Attorney General, somebody to do something. And I guess that's where the frustration of the people is that nothing keeps happening.
I get the frustration, but let's put it on the state level. Alan Wilson happens to be a friend of mine, but let's use him as an example anyway. Can any of your listeners or any of your state legislators force Alan to do something?
No.
Can they force your local solicitor to do something?
I don't know.
They can't?
No, they can't. No.
So we can't force Loretta Lynch to do something. What we can do is make sure Loretta Lynch is not your next Attorney General. There are remedies that our founding fathers gave us that happen every 4 years in November. So you want to talk about a jury? That's the jury. The jury meets in November. And frankly, I don't know what additional evidence the jury could possibly need. I thought during our hearing with Comey, our committee did a pretty good job of pointing out not only did she make false statements to the public, she made false statements to the FBI.
Yeah, I thought you did an excellent job in that. The clips from that are just awesome, Trey, and yet nothing happened.
Well, but you say nothing happens. People don't trust her. And whether or not they factor that into their decision on whether or not to promote her to commander-in-chief is something. I spent 16 years in the criminal justice system. I guess that is perceived as kind of the penultimate, a criminal indictment, a criminal charge, a trial, a conviction or acquittal. But that is not the only way that we can express ourselves in this republic. I mean, the media can't indict anybody. That doesn't keep them from asking questions.
That's true.
I'll give you one other example. The Supreme Court decisions. You know, people may or may not like, I suspect they probably would not like, some of the recent Supreme Court decisions handed down by our United States Supreme Court. But that is not going to stop them from trying to convince their kids and grandkids and other people in their sphere of influence that the Supreme Court's not right. They're not just going to throw up their hands and say, oh, well, the Supreme Court's ruled, that's the end of that. They're not going to give up trying to persuade. The fact that Loretta Lynch and Jim Comey did not bring charges does not mean that we should give up our willingness and our effort to persuade our fellow citizens that we deserve better.
Well, we do deserve better, and I really am deadly afraid, Trey, that things are not going to go, that unfortunately the other side of the fence, the Clinton fence here, the Democratic machine, is going to roll right over the Republicans comes this fall.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that there's enough information already known about the Democrat nominee that make it a pretty easy decision for people?
Absolutely.
All right, so there really is nothing else they need to know about her. They already know about her.
Then,
well, that only leaves one part of the equation.
There you go. That's true. And that, from that standpoint, that's pretty scary stuff out there. And when people are saying that they're going to support nobody, or they're going to support the Green candidate or whatever, it becomes pretty difficult to see a pathway here. But we probably could go round and round on that. And I just hope that things turn out well in November. And I think everybody just needs to be on the same page when it comes to Hillary Clinton. And Donald Trump is not the perfect candidate, but he is a candidate that can make changes, and that's what we need.
I am ready for an executive branch that faithfully executes the law and one that restores the respect for the rule of law to where it ought to be in a republic. And I think that is best accomplished by a Republican, having watched the last 7 years of the Obama Holder Lynch efforts to do so. So pretty easy analysis for me. And that's a really big issue to me, respect for the rule of law and the even-handedness of our justice system.
Which brings us to our next part of the topic, is that you have been working on practices and perceptions of the police, because I know that having worked in law enforcement as a prosecutor, that's important to you, and now you've also joined up with Senator Tim Scott on race and policing. How is that coming together? I know South Carolina is way ahead of the curve looking at the rest of our country.
I think we are, and you could see about that, by the way, the shooting of the unarmed black motorist in Charleston was handled. There was a not only a charge very, very quickly, but it was the most serious charge that can be leveled. It was a murder charge. So, I mean, ultimately, a jury will decide whether or not all the elements have been met, but the initial charge was the most serious one that could be leveled. You're right, for 16 years, I had to sit with the parents of black and white victims, and I had to stand in front of black and white and brown jurors, and there's a reason the lady wears a blindfold. It is kind of what I keep coming back to. Lady Justice wears a blindfold. So whenever someone perceives that the justice system is not even-handed or fair, it really is detrimental for all of us. And so what Tim and I have decided, no offense to the media, but people have a tendency to be more candid when they are not worried about reading their words in the newspaper the next morning. So we want to foster a really frank, honest, even step-on-your-toes conversation between law enforcement and groups that feel like, and again, I mentioned it yesterday, there's reality and there's perception, and there's a difference, except that maybe there isn't. So if you perceive something to be true, even if I do not perceive it to be true, you still got to talk about it. You got to talk about whether your perceptions are rooted in something that is realistic, factual, historical. So what we did yesterday, we just start the company, we close the door, and we start. There's a reason that Tim Scott called me after the shooting in Charleston. There's a reason that a black man from Charleston called a white guy from Spartanburg after the shooting at Emanuel Church in Charleston. There's a reason we have that relationship. And until you have that relationship, you cannot, I don't think, have the frank conversations about where we are with respect to the justice system. So right now, we're just trying to create an environment where those kind of honest, frank conversations can be held. And that's what we did yesterday.
And are you going to be doing more of them around the state, or are you going to take this to other parts of the country? What are you thinking, Trey?
Well, Tim and I are focused on South Carolina. I am on a similar committee in Congress. Chairman Goodlatte, the chairman of Judiciary, asked me to serve on a similar committee where we are looking at national issues. But Senator Scott's focus and my focus is throughout the state of South Carolina, facilitating a broader conversation about race and perception and unity. Frankly, the unity that comes from having a relationship with other people. It is really, really hard to hate something that you know really, really well. So that's kind of our focus. This is a South Carolina focus, and if the rest of the country wants to learn from it, they're welcome to.
Well, I mean, I just think because we already are a step ahead, but of course there are issues, and there always, I guess, will be issues, and to be able to discuss them and get them out there, I think it is amazing what Tim has said about being in Washington, D.C., and being profiled even by your policing force right there on the Capitol. It's pretty amazing stuff, isn't it?
Well, I know at least one of the nights it happened. I had dinner with him, and it's happened more than once. But yeah, I mean, it's not like it's hard to pick Tim Scott out of the United States Senate. It's not like you're picking me or Mulvaney, a middle-aged white guy, out of the House. That might be a challenge, but picking Tim Scott out of the 100 United States senators is not a challenge. But yet. Even though he's got his pin on, he's got his Senate pin on, he stopped way more than I am. And that's not a South Carolina thing. That's a Washington, D.C. thing.
Exactly. Well, that's my point. It's, you know, it's not just South Carolina. We're talking about the nation. That's why I wondered if some of these things would bleed over into some of the other states, because they seem to have, in my opinion, so much more problem than we do right here in South Carolina.
Well, I hope they will. But back to the relationships, I don't have relationships with law enforcement officers in other states.
Sure.
I don't have relationships, you know, Tim has a lot of relationships with the faith community in Charleston, but really throughout the state. He's a great guy. He spends a lot of time around preachers. I've spent more time around cops and prosecutors and judges. So that's where our relationships are. So when I call a chief of police who happens to be an African American, or when I call the chief of police in Greenville who happens to be white and say, we need you for this, I think they're more likely to come than if I call some sheriff or police chief I've never met or heard of.
I guess is where I was going, for others to start the conversation.
And I'd love that, because I'm sure Massachusetts would really not like for South Carolina to be the model. But the reality is, we handle certain issues a whole lot better than the national narrative would lead the rest of the country to believe.
Exactly. And I think it's important that we get our country, our black, white, brown, yellow back on the same page, working together, because this is the thing that seems to be fracturing our country even more when we see this. And particularly with the 24-hour media, it just constantly drives it home.
Yeah, I really do think, and sitting around that table yesterday, 99% of the world we have in common. What we want for our kids, what we want for our community, what we want for our state. And for whatever reason, we have a tendency to focus on those things that separate us and disunite us. And there are entire campaigns run on disunity, mm-hmm. Trying to pit this group against the other group. And frankly, politics will not solve racial issues in our country. Politics exacerbates it. It won't solve it. It'll be solved when people just say, you know what, 80% of us want to live in harmony, and 80% of us want to fully embrace justice. And then there are the fringes on either side that just make a living based on discord, and we're just going to tune them out. I think that's kind of where people are, but it won't be politics. Politics is not going to. Politics is built on contrast. Justice is built on unity. It'll be a pursuit of justice that helps us here, in my judgment.
Absolutely. Well, Congressman Trey Gowdy, let's not make it so long again. I really have enjoyed this conversation, and I know our listeners have too.
I've enjoyed it thoroughly. Thank you for having me on. God bless you, and I hope I talk to you soon.
You will. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.